Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Time Out. I'm Eve Rodsky, author of the New York Times bestseller Fair Play and Find Your Unicorn Space, activist on the gender division of labor, attorney, and family mediator.
And I'm Dr. Aditi Narukar, a physician and medical correspondent with an expertise in the science of stress, resilience, mental health, and burnout.
We're here to peel back the layers around why it's so easy for society to guard men's time as if it's diamonds and to treat women's time as if it's infinite, like sand. And whether you are partnered with or without children or in a career where you want more boundaries, this is the place for you, for all family structures. We're here to take a time out to learn, get inspired, and most importantly, reclaim our time. So, Aditi, I'm going to tell you a story today about communication.
I love your stories, Eve.
It's a small story, but it's a couple that I really love because they decided to implement and play Fair Play during the pandemic. And in the process of having a communication check-in together around what was valuable to them, the couple, I'll call them Richard and Amy, decided that they really cared and they wanted to keep magical beings in their deck. That was something they were not going to throw out. By magical beings, I mean Santa. I mean the Tooth Fairy. So in the course of this conversation, Richard decides that he was going to be the card holder for magical beings. He wanted to be the Tooth Fairy for his daughter. And his daughter, they're telling me the story that she loses her second tooth. And ta-da, guess what happens? Tooth Fairy doesn't come that night. So what I love about this story is the way that Richard and Amy told it to me about what their communication patterns would have been before Fair Play versus what happened in the moment. So before Fair Play, what they told me would have happened, because they didn't have any practice, communication practice, they just defaulted into their old bad patterns, would have been that Amy would have reverted to her verbal assassin personality, which is what she calls herself, where she would have said to Richard, wow, you know, you've ruined our daughter's life. So that's the end of it. There's no magic. There's no magic. She will never believe in magic again. And so
and it's all your fault.
It's all your fault. And she'll probably be in therapy the rest of her life because the Tooth Fairy goes to every other child and not her. So she would have gone really big and really mean and how he ruined his daughter's life. And what Richard said, as he laughed and said, yes, that's how Amy would have reacted. Richard said, and not only that, but he would have blamed Amy for not reminding him to put the dollar under the pillow. So after what happened now in this story, since he took the card, he owned the mistake, right? Because he had the responsibility. So he was able to say, my bad, I totally messed up and I can't believe I didn't get the dollar under the pillow. But not only that, he took action to carry through his mistake. He communicated with his daughter and said, I was able to email toothfairy@gmail.com, which was true. He did email and creepily he got a response, and he had printed out the response for his daughter and said, look, toothfairy@gmail.com says she's backlogged. She's having a, you know, what I guess would be now called a supply chain issue with the Tooth Fairy. And you know what? When she comes the second night or the night late, she brings double the money. And now he says his daughter's always asking, when the Tooth Fairy comes, can she come late? Because I want to get double the money. But what I love about that story so much, it shows a pattern of communication that could have been so toxic and damaging. And instead, it was filled with grace and humor and generosity and a very different type of family interaction. And so I love that story because it's so small, but it really sums up a lot about what we're going to be talking today, how we communicate, how we check in, how we are allowed to give some grace to people in our lives that we love, yet still hold our firm boundaries and say we expect a certain standard of how things should or could be done because we've agreed to it together.
As you're telling us a story about Richard and Amy, I'm thinking about my own communication snafu, which happened just last week. Last week, I had to do a TV interview. My husband had a meeting and the times coincided. In the morning, it's a hectic time. People are running around, getting ready for school, drop off. So I said to my husband, this was around 7:15, I said, can you do school drop off today? And he said, I have a meeting that starts at 8:30. I interpreted that as great, plenty of time to do school drop off. So I started getting ready for my work day. Now it's 7:45 and I said, oh, are you going to get ready to go to school? And he said, but I have a meeting at 8:30. I told you that. And that was kind of an aha moment for me, because what he meant when he said, I have a meeting at 8:30 was, and therefore I cannot do school drop off. I interpreted it as, I have something at 8:30. It's 7:15 or it's 7 o'clock now. Easy. I can make it work. There's so many layers to that. And you know, your story about Richard and Amy, the conversation that we're going to be having today, my communication snafu, really makes me think about the fact that so much of our communication, very deeply important communication, happens often at the most inopportune times. That we're not sitting down together at the table having a deep conversation when we're both fresh. It's often two ships passing in the night. We're working, we're taking care of kids, we're doing so many other things, and you say something and you think someone's going to pick up on it, and then they don't. And it's no one's fault. It's just a shoddy system.
So, well, something important you just said, I want to pause on it for a minute. And that is the idea of communication as a what? A, like you said, ships passing in a night. It's going to be in the moment, feedback in the moment that often can feel like our emotions are high and our cognition is low. So many of us are communicating that way. And it's the way we've always done it and with the way we will always continue to do it. But what we're going to be talking about today is communication as a practice. Aditi, I interviewed over 1,000 people on social media, on text, with a survey question that was deliberately vague. It asked, what is your most important practice? And I declined to give more context for when I asked that question. And so a lot of people said, well, I'm confused by your question. But when they finally were prompted to answer, most people were responding with things like running, meditation, or taking my dog out for a walk, they were equating practice with something more along the lines of personal self-care. I didn't get one person that said communication is their most important practice. And listeners, we're here to tell you that communication is your most important practice. And if you don't have a partner, with your roommates, with your parents, with your work colleagues, communication in all contexts will be your most important practice.
And it's a lifelong practice and it's work. And you keep working at it and it's a skill and it's something that you keep building.
And you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me, Aditi, when I sit there for the seventh hour on the couch and say to myself, I just want to be fit by sitting here on the couch. Like, why have they not invented a way for me to get cardio and muscle strength by just sitting on the couch? And sadly, it doesn't happen. So just like the muscles in our body, right? Communication is a muscle. Good things don't come to those who wait. Good things come to those who practice. So that's why after the break, we were so excited to talk to my high school friend and man with the coolest job I can think of, conversation designer Daniel Stillman, who's going to teach us much more about these topics of how to communicate, why to communicate, and what to communicate.
You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So our guest today is Daniel Stillman. He's an executive coach and facilitator, and Daniel works with clients of all shapes and sizes on leadership and team dynamics, as well as on product and organizational innovation. Daniel hosts the Conversation Factory podcast and is author of Good Talk, How to Design Conversations That Matter, one of my favorite books, and really a handbook for change makers and innovators. Welcome, Daniel.
Hey, Eve. Thanks for having me.
Not only, I think, do you have the coolest job that exists, but we also know each other from Stuyvesant High School.
Go peg legs.
Go peg legs, exactly. But I really wanted to ask you before we start, how did you become a conversation designer and get the coolest job of all time?
I'll just say that often I feel like the title conversation designer just makes people nervous. So they're like, oh, you're the expert. And I'm like, I'm just a fan of conversations. My thesis, and I know you've heard me say this before, is that we're all conversation designers. We're all designing our conversations at work, at home, all the time. I just, I'm a nerd. I've become a conversation nerd over the last couple of years. I mean, it's like I studied design. I studied industrial design in grad school. And years later, heard somebody put those two words together. I'd gone through all these evolutions of different types of design that came through. There was like interaction design and then experience design and service design. And it's like conversation design. I'm like, what does that even mean? That was 2015. And I thought about it for a while. And I was like, that is very confronting and weird. And that's actually one of the reasons why I started my podcast. God, in 2017 was like, what does it mean to design a conversation? I was just curious. So that's how I got that title. Curiosity. That's my answer.
I love it. I love it. And would you consider a conversation a subset of communication?
That's a really interesting question, Eve, because I think some people would say like, oh, a real conversation is only one where all parties are fully engaged in discovering a surprising outcome. I would say that's a great conversation. I would still say somebody shouting at someone else is just a very shriveled version of that. It's a one-way conversation with a broken power dynamic and with somebody who wasn't really clear on how to get what they want and somebody who didn't have a good conversation with themselves about how to get what they want from someone else. So I would say like, yes, anytime anybody is talking, it is a conversation. One-way communication is one type of conversation because we always want something to happen afterwards, right?
I also think that's interesting because that's sort of how I link your work to the active design of a conversation to broader communication, because we're all communicating, whether it's dumping wet clothes on someone's pillow.
My favorite.
Right,
or that sends
yelling.
A signal right there.
Yes, yes. But I think the way I like to connect your work as a conversation designer to broader communication is that idea that the intention of a conversation means that you can actually have an outcome afterwards and behavior that's different than it was in the past.
Yeah.
What is that Albert Einstein quote, right? The definition of stupidity is doing the same thing over and over again.
Yes.
And expecting a different result.
Correct.
You can get a different result by listening to Dan Stillman and how he designs conversations. I was very inspired by Good Talk, your book. I was very inspired to take part of your learnings to my relationship. And I'm going to pass it over to Dr. Aditi to ask you some of that questions that relate to how we bring your work to the hardest domain, the home.
Wow. And that's what's really up when people say, like, what's at stake for designing conversations? Often I talk about business conversations because you're like, well, we got a lot of salaries in the room and we just burned them all. But I think the home is a much, much higher stakes conversation because that's like our whole lives.
Daniel, you asked the question in one of your writings, what are conversations made of?
Mm.
And then you said the answers are diverse. Voices, ideas, vibes, connections, collaboration, listening, emotions, reactions, gaps, openness.
Mm.
And when I think about what makes a happy home or what makes a happy partnership or what makes a happy family structure, these are the sorts of things that come to mind. I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about this concept of what are conversations made of.
So two things come up. One is the idea of that we can design something comes from this idea that a super broad definition of design as intentionality and choices that we make. And so designing as intentionality and purpose means you could just ask like, well, what are we optimizing for? And so we could say like, yeah, I want to optimize for joy or clarity or speed or consistency, but also noticing what the conversation can be made of means how do I affect my choices? And so just the idea of the realization that dumping wet clothes on a pillow is sending a signal that I am communicating, like, oh, I have a choice about how I communicate, what I communicate with. My mom, who I really admire, has this wonderful phrase, which is to start as you mean to continue. And I was literally just talking about this on a coaching call with someone. And the example I gave is I sometimes get angry with something that my wife has done or hasn't done. And so the question is, will expressing my anger through anger get me what I want?
No.
Well, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Hot take. No.
And usually no.
Right. But that requires a lot of emotional maturity to realize, like, am I getting what I want? It also has to do with understanding that, like, it's really hard to change your tone of voice and hide the fact that you're angry. So you actually have to have a conversation with yourself before you have a conversation with someone else. Right. So this is the thing that came up for me over the years of studying conversations, is realizing that before we have conversations with other people, we have conversations with ourselves about, like, well, I don't deserve that. How dare they? I can't believe I always, they never, right? All of those things that are our reactions. It's very hard to change your first reaction. This is mental processing and saying, well, what do I really want out of this? Do I want to share my anger with them so that they feel my pain as I'm feeling it? Do I want to just pass it along and say, like, here, now you're angry too? Or do I want to have a peaceable relationship? Do I want to have a tidier home? Start as I mean to continue, right? To think that sending an angry signal in an angry way will result in a peaceable home is just not understanding how physics works. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So we're just talking about the physics of conversations here. So you got to do that internal processing to say, well, what do I want? What do I need? What do I think is possible here? Like, what will help me communicate more clearly with them? What do they want? And what do they need? What do they expect?
I need to pause on the importance of what you're saying, because we literally prep for everything. We prep for a 5K race. Mm-hmm. We prep for parent-teacher conferences for our kids, or at least we have to find out what the Zoom link is that never seems to work. We prep for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
But ironically, the thing that's probably the most important thing to prep for in our homes, our conversations with our partners, our children, the stakeholders around us that make our home organization function, we give literally no forethought to.
Yeah.
There's no prep.
We're shooting from the hip based on all of our habits. And so this is the other aspect of conversation design, is understanding either I'm going to run with habit or I'm going to apply some conscious intention to it. But there's another piece to it, which is our partners are also coming with their own designs and their own expectations. And that's why having the conversation about the type of conversation you're going to have. So if you said, like, honey, I'd like to yell at you for 5 or 6 minutes. Berate you and then have makeup sex. Does that sound cool for you? And they'd be like, yeah, let her loose. And if that's what you need. But if this is designing the conversation for someone versus and for yourself, or designing with. So, like, what do they want? Honey, I'd like to talk about this. The idea that we can't propose, we proposed marriage, right? But we can't propose, like, here's my agenda for this evening, right? And I get it. There's this infantilization of ourselves and others where we just really want our loved ones, our significant other, just to read our minds, to know exactly what we want and need. And the fact that I should have to explain myself and to be as prepared for a conversation at home as I have to be at work seems laborious. And yet I think it doesn't have to be that hard. It's really just saying, hey, this is what I want. What do you want? Let's talk about how this is going to go.
I want to just ask you why and tell you what I did with Seth, because earlier you were talking about this conversation operating system, which is really your elements of conversation.
Yes.
And within history or the length or the life of a conversation, the hardest part I saw in my research was the invitation.
Yeah.
When I asked very, very, very diverse lived experiences in 17 countries, how do you communicate about domestic life? And I'll give you an example. I went on to a Facebook group that somebody told me about. It's called The Reason I Hate My Husband and Kids During COVID. And
good title.
In this Facebook group that someone told me about, I was my typical lurker watching people post. And one woman posts, if my husband dies during COVID, it won't be because of the disease. It'll be because of me. So that was a very provocative post. So I DM'd her and I said, I'm a researcher on the couple's dynamics and conversation and communication. I would love to know how you typically communicate about domestic life with your partner.
Mm.
And she wrote back earnestly, I don't communicate about domestic life. It's too triggering.
Yeah.
This is my safe space.
Mm.
So I want to just reflect on this for a second as we're talking about communication and conversation, that publicly threatening to murder her partner in front of 27,000 strangers felt more safe to her than directly inviting her partner into a conversation about what is troubling her about the dynamics in her home. So why?
Yeah.
Why is that?
There's so many layers to that. Here's the thing. Most negotiations stop on the internal conversation before they even start, because there's this term called aspiration value. We ask for what we believe we deserve. There's all these studies that show that people won't ask for a raise, or a lot of women won't apply for a job unless they feel like they meet 100% of the things that they're asking for. Whereas for whatever reason, men will apply for that job at 60% of qualifications. So take that with as many grains of salt as you want. I don't know why this is, but it is very possible that people look at the history of their relationship and say, well, there's just no point. And so the conversation stops before it starts. But as you say, with invitation, the question is, how can I bring them to the table? It is my job, because I want it, to find a way to bring them to the table, to invite them, to appeal to their sense of play, to their sense of purpose or potential. Right? Three ways to motivate someone. Play is the most motivational, which is why I think fair play is a really powerful approach, right? It's a playful approach to say like, hey, let's put it all on the table. Let's talk about it. But there's also purpose, which is to say like, well, what kind of a marriage do you want to have? Right? That's purpose and potential. You know, 5-10 years down the road, like, how do you think we should be interacting? Right? So that's invitation. When we talked about what our conversations made out of and how to think about them more intentionally, one of the things that's really challenging is that we are really good at being efficient. We jump to conclusions about what somebody thinks. We're trying to guess what somebody's thinking all the time, what they mean. But the truth is, we can talk at about 120 words per minute, but we think at 4,000 words per minute, which means there will always be more to say than we can say. Which means it's always a good idea to slow down the conversation and ask people, tell me more, rather than going to jump the conclusion and say, he's always like this or she's always like that. Say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, what did you mean to say? Tell me more about that. We expect a 200 millisecond gap between when we say something and when we expect a response. If somebody waits longer, we think they're overthinking it. And yet it actually takes around 600 milliseconds for somebody to cook up a reasonable answer, for their brains to catch up. There's research on that. I think it's Tanya Stivers out of the Max Planck Institute. Like, people need time to think. And yet we're like, tell me right now. And that's because we get heated because there's so much at stake. And so slowing things down is always going to be a great way to design a more safe and effective home conversation.
This leads me to this wonderful thing that you said. Curiosity smells a lot like empathy. Many folks will tell you that empathy is the secret key to transforming conversations. And they're right. But it's hard to empathize with someone you truly disagree with. And it's really hard to fake. Curiosity is easier to fake and just as effective. Active listening is the key. Yeah. I loved it.
I love it so much.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think it is hard to fake. It's hard to veil your distaste for someone, but if you can just squeeze yourself and say like, you know, it sounds like you said this, but I'm guessing that that's not really what you meant to say. So, you know, now that you've heard me say what you said, tell me what you really think. Now, I'm on the edge of blowing a fuse, but I'm slowing it down a little bit by using that ace in the hole of active listening. It's just a safe place where it's like, I think I heard you say this. Is that everything? Was there more you wanted to say about that? Tell me more, because otherwise I'm going to divorce you. Right. Don't say that.
Did you actively threaten to murder me in front of 27,000 right. strangers? Is that what you meant to say?
I mean, the flip side of this, if we're talking about a relationship between people who identify as male and people who identify as female, there's some roles that we slip into. And even in a relationship where maybe both people don't identify as anything or however they identify, people take up a certain role. Like, somebody's going to be more invested in planning and logistics, and somebody's going to be like, well, why can't we just let it roll? My wife and I had a whole conversation about, like, not planning our honeymoon. It was hilarious. I was like, wait, so let me understand this correctly. I really want to understand what your ideal vacation is, because I'm interested and I love her. So leading with curiosity.
There
and
you go.
When I overplan, or as I would put it, plan. She's like, where's the space for, you know, exploration and improvisation? And I'm like, okay, well, like, tell me your favorite vacations that you've taken with your family. And she laid out a couple, and I was like, oh, okay. Like, so it helped me understand. I got curious, and she was able to tell me. So there's always going to be somebody who's too much or not enough of whatever it is, and somebody who's taking an active role and somebody who's taking a passive role, somebody who thinks that things aren't fair. And that person's job is to redesign the conversation as they feel like they can.
I love that. And I need to belabor your three P's again, because
yeah.
I want to go back to the invitation, because I do think that it is the hardest barrier I've seen to fair play. When people get there, you know, it's like anything, right? Where anticipation is worse than the thing itself. They're yeah. like, wow, this is actually really fun to talk about who planned holidays growing up or what we both think about discipline and screen time. Once people are at the table, I've found that the conversations usually go much better than people think. Yeah. It's this huge barrier to getting there. And so could you go back to play, purpose, and potential and give us three openers for people if they do want to have a conversation. We talked, one of our guests had a viral article that was called "My Wife Left Me Because I Left Dishes by the Side of the Sink." So say that couple is talking about trying to get those dishes off the side of the sink, washed and in their proper home. Mm. What would three invitations be to get somebody to the table?
I'll see what I can do, but I want to just pull back a little bit and say that play, purpose, and potential, it comes from this research on intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. Extrinsic motivators are things like emotional pressure, economic pressure, and inertia. Those are the anti-patterns. So if we're just to say, like, emotional pressure, like, how would you invite someone to engage in a conversation using emotional pressure?
I will never speak to you again unless you sit down with me.
I'll never speak to you again, right? Like, if we can't work this out, I just don't see us being able to go to that party next week or go to your parents for Thanksgiving. That is emotional pressure. And that is effed up, right? But that is not motivating. You're trying to use fear. That's like reading Machiavelli and thinking it's a guidebook. But
how about one woman who said, if you don't start cleaning up every single time that you don't do it, I'm taking a picture of it and I'm posting it to my Instagram.
Right. That's assuming that shame is a motivator for them, which for some people it is, right? But it's a very poor way of sustained motivation. And just to, like, go into the worst of them, which is inertia, which is like, but you've always done it this way. How could you possibly ask to change the way we've been doing things for years? And to appeal, which is like, well, we just do it this way. And so recently, actually, I'll tell you a personal story. I cook a lot. I enjoy cooking. Chopping vegetables is one way for me to relieve, you know, anxiety. I'm a very natural, fast chef, and she is less so. So when she was in grad school and in school full time, I was like, I gotta cook so there's enough food in the house so my wife doesn't die. And she can go through grad school. Like, I wanted to make sure there was just a casserole that she could just heat up all the time. And then I realized we're not in that situation anymore. She's been at a new job for 2 years. I'm very proud of everything she's done. And so I said to her, I was like, hey, do you think maybe you could do dinner one night a week? like Monday nights I have my men's group and we only have like 2 hours. And I was like, you know, maybe you could do dinner like that one night. And she was like, yeah. So there's another aspect to invitation. There's play, purpose, and potential, but there's also foot in the door, which is Robert Caldini, right? He talks about the like getting your foot in the door, like just a penny would help.
I love that.
Anything you could do would be great. So doing a very, very small ask is another way to increase the intrinsic motivation is by reducing the barrier. It's like, could you wash that one fork once a week? Right? Resorting to a playful approach means lowering the stakes. Honey, I'd love to talk about the dishes. I'm feeling anxious about it. That's owning your own experience. It seems just totally innocuous. Making it this huge thing and bringing the whole story makes it very hard. You're not appealing to play or purpose or potential. This is hard. And that means you have to go to your own therapy, have that inner conversation with yourself to deal with. It's always been like this, or you never that. That actually doesn't bring somebody to the table. I think it's much, much more easy to say like, hey, and anything else after that.
Do you think, Daniel, that this is a personality trait of yours? Or do you feel like this is something that can be taught?
I think empathy and curiosity can be learned if somebody's willing to be curious, if somebody wants things to be better, and if we're willing to ask for more than we think is possible. This goes back to the question of aspiration value. If you think there's no point in bringing it up, there isn't. If you're going to come with anger, expecting it to become peaceable seems absurd to me. So finding a playful way to appeal to what is playful in your partner means you have to empathize with them and understand what motivates them. What kind of potential do they want? What is their ideal situation? I think if you can process those emotions and also empathize with your partner and think about what motivates them, I can tell my wife I'm angry without being angry.
Can I tell you why I love this so much? Because of a poll that I did during COVID, which was, I've said this to you, which is sort of tongue in cheek, where I've been surveying people, now I'm over 1,000, where I've asked people what is their most important practice. But not one person now, and over 1,000 people, when I've asked it vaguely, have thought of communication in that way as their most important practice. But you have shown us today how you can begin that practice in such a thoughtful, intentional way. And I hope you'll come back as a part two for how to continue the conversation. But this is the hardest part.
Yeah.
Getting to that table with play, purpose, and potential. Mm. And so you've helped us unpack that. Couple that with a splash of intrinsic motivation, and we're going to have much better conversations.
God willing. Good luck out there,
so
kids.
Good.
You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hi, it's me, Eve. Are you a therapist, counselor, coach, or nutritionist that has thought about introducing the Fair Play system directly to your clients? Well, now you can. Come enroll in the Fair Play Method, a new online program that provides you with hands-on training, a ton of valuable resources, and a community of certified professionals who are all part of a greater cultural movement for systemic change. Learn more about how you can help your clients shift the domestic workload in their own homes towards more equity, more fairness, and greater connectivity. Visit fairplaymethod.com. So as you may know now, every episode of this podcast ends with an action item for you, our listeners, that we call a timeout. This is really a time for you to focus on yourself and reflect on what you're hearing today. And we're starting the conversation first with ourselves and then ultimately with those around us. Today, we're thinking about how we communicate. That's our timeout for today. Before we think about how we interact with others, it's very helpful to reflect on our vulnerabilities, our strengths, what we can do better, what we don't do as well. So today's timeout is an exercise that I like to refer to as the reverse newlywed game. And I'm going to play it with you, Aditi, for our listeners. And you can do it by listening with us and thinking along about how you would track as Aditi answers. So reverse newlywed game communication 101 quiz that we're going to be doing today that comes out of Fair Play, the book. It's in chapter 5, and we call it the communication vulnerability quiz. So how would Mac, your partner, describe you in a moment when emotion is high and cognition is low in your household? So think back to a time when, I don't know, a dirty sock was on the floor or you stepped on a Lego or dinner wasn't ready when you came in the door or something where maybe your emotion was high and your cognition was low. I want to know if Mac would, one, say that you're long-winded, you're talking and no one's listening. Two, that you use sharp commands. Sir, your drill sergeant delivery isn't always popular with the troops. Three, you use bad timing, which means you drop your grievances or request for help in inopportune moments. Oh, I see you're sleeping, but I'm going to shake you awake because I need to talk to you about what's happening tomorrow. Four, toxic word choice. Or as my friend Claudia calls it, the verbal assassin, where you say things in a really calm way, but they are really, really mean. Like, I didn't realize you were going to become the worst father that ever existed. Was that something that you knew was going to happen to you? Five, all or nothing. You literally never replace the toilet paper roll. You always keep the seat up. Six, dredging up the past. This is just like the last time you da-da-da. Or finally, seven, which is avoidance and boiling over. I didn't say anything. I really didn't want to say anything. I really, really didn't want to have this conversation. But now I'm really, really pissed. What do you think Mac would say about you?
I have a big smile on my face as you've been reading all of those. You know, what's so interesting is that I pride myself on being an excellent communicator and do it for a living. And yet, I still have communication conflicts with my partner, which is so fascinating to me. I would have to say different situations would warrant different responses, but I like the drill sergeant. I feel like that would be a common complaint.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's mine too. So maybe that's why we get along so well. Seth often says I sound like nails on the chalkboard every time I say anything. And it's very, very sharp commands. And I think the beauty of really understanding and starting to think about your own vulnerabilities, and I hope our listeners will do this alongside us as well, is that it gives them humor. It disarms things. When you have an invitation that Dan Stillman was talking about to come to the table, you know, often people are afraid to come to the table if they're used to a pattern of you in your communication vulnerability. So when you can start saying things, or when I was able to start saying things to Seth, like, okay, I know I sound like nails on the chalkboard. I know you don't want to talk to me because my tone sucks, but I promise you that in this invitation, I'm going to do better. It not only disarms the other person, but it allows and opens up that invitation that we talked about today in a way that's much more palatable to the person you're speaking with.
Yeah, it's almost like you become so self-aware. You know what they're thinking and how they're feeling in that moment because you've been in that pattern so many times before, and you're calling yourself out. And I think in many ways, as you enter a high conflict conversation, being able to call yourself out, have a little humor, going into it, like Daniel said, going into it with an open mind. He said something so wonderful about, if you want the outcome to be anger, then go in with anger. Mm-hmm. Or if you want the outcome to be sadness, and go in with sadness. And of course, we don't want anger or sadness in the conversations. We want resolution. And so by owning your own stuff and your own conversational vulnerabilities and communication vulnerabilities, I think that's one great first step into bringing together a conversation that ends in reconciliation. And if not reconciliation, just a deeper understanding and low conflict. And so based on Eve's quiz, think about Daniel's communication tips and ask yourself, who are you as you enter these high conflict conversations, and how are you going to start changing the conversation?
Next week, we'll be starting to talk about the three permissions needed to fully dive into your unicorn space. We have a special guest, Greg McEwen, one of my favorite authors of Essentialism, and his new book, Effortless. And we get to talk to him about the perks and the permission to be unavailable from your roles. Thank you for listening to Time Out, a production of iHeart Podcasts and Hello Sunshine. I'm Eve Rodsky, author of the New York Times bestseller Fair Play and Find Your Unicorn Space. Follow me on social media at Eve Rodsky and learn more about our work at Fair Play Life.
And I'm Dr. Aditi Narukar, a Harvard physician with a specialty in stress, resilience, burnout, and mental health. Follow me on social media at Dr. Aditi Narukar and find out more about my work at draditi.com. That's draditi.com.
Our Hello Sunshine team is Amanda Farrand, Erin Stover, and Jennifer Yonker. Our iHeart Media team is Ali Perry, Jennifer Bassett, and Jessica Kreinschich. We hope you all love taking a much-needed time out with us today. Listen and subscribe to Time Out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.